Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service to public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on advertising when we come back. The genocidal policy of Global 2000 and this New World Order program are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. And that's not just my opinion either. You know, Jesus of Nazareth held that same view when he said in Matthew 24, verse 22, that except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive. Now, there are 64 of these life-threatening problems described in the scripture detailing this New World Order and their Global 2000 genocide plan. And the scripture teaches preparation for this great tribulation, not just apathy and indifference. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this Global 2000 New World Order nightmare. Now, if you'd like to do just that, why don't you call, write, or email the law school and ask for those 64 life-threatening problems from the scripture, and let's talk about formulating a real and meaningful and intelligent plan to survive Global 2000 and all of these 64 life-threatening problems described in scripture as the Great Tribulation. Why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Keep in mind that if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine when you get to the website, and then send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about advertising, and I mentioned to you last time that advertising is a controlled lie. Nothing more, nothing less. That it's based upon vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, the five motivators of human nature. If you've ever been to sales school, the sales instructor or the teacher, you know, should have started off by telling you that there are certain things that we're looking for in a customer, in a person who's come onto the car lot and he's kicking the tires. You know, what are we looking for? And we're looking for his hot button. It's what we call in the trade his hot button. And we're going to push your buttons, partner. And you got five buttons, and we're going to push one of your five buttons, and we're going to sell you a car that you don't need, can't use, shouldn't have, and don't need, and make you love it. But it's a deception when we do that. I can always look back in time and, you know, people motivated by vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear are really not the best candidates to be out here in the marketplace eating. It's kind of like going into the delicatessen and you're hungry. You haven't eaten for 3 days and you walk in there and you want to buy some groceries for the week. You know, they always tell you when you go shopping, you know, make sure you eat before you go into the supermarket, because if you're hungry, you'll buy everything in sight. And that's a part of this thing of advertising. Advertising isn't just an ad that you see on Katie Couric in the 6 o'clock news. It can be an article that you read in U.S. News and World Report. It can be a book that you read, a story that somebody tells you. Everything that you listen to, everything that comes into your mind through your five senses has to be weighed and evaluated. I remember Groucho Marx used to use this line. He said, "Are you going to believe me or your lion eyes?" You know, there's an old adage that says, "Seeing is believing." Well, that's no longer true. You know as well as I do that when you saw that movie, The Titanic, that was computer animation. At least a lot of it was. Now, you know, if you're good, you could probably identify the scenes that were done with computer animation and the scenes that were done for real, you know, at a real set. But hell, that ship, the Titanic, it sank clear back in 1912. That what you're watching on the screen isn't the real deal, is it? So it's a fiction, and fiction is a lie. People read Harlequin books or they read fiction stories. Those are all lies. Those are just made up dream world events that never actually occurred. And furthermore, most of what happens, most of what is recorded in your history books isn't even true. How do I know that? Well, listen to this. Senator George F. Hoar, H-O-A-R, not the real Hoar, just Hoar. In his recently published autobiography of 70 years, says, "The recollections of the actors in important political transactions are doubtless of great historical value. But I ought to say frankly that my experience has taught me that the memory of men, even of good and true men, as to matters in which they have been personal actors, is frequently most dangerous and misleading. I could recount many curious stories which have been told to me by friends who have been writers of history and biography of the contradictory statements that they have received from the best men in regard to scenes in which they have been present or actors." Now, did you hear what that senator said? Senator George F. Hoar, now this is back in the 1800s, say. He said, "Even of men who are honest and true and were the actual actors on the historical stage, when they are giving statements to historians and biographers, give contradictory statements." Why is that? How can that be? How can a man who is honest and true give a contradictory statement concerning an event that he was personally present or an actor in it? Well, listen to this. Edgar James Swift, a professor of psychology at Washington University, in his volume Psychology and the Day's Work, which was first published back in 1918, some 10 years subsequent to the suggestions on the subject, so far as it relates to the testimony of witnesses offered by me in a previous edition, has devoted many pages to a most interesting and instructive discussion on this subject, and it is a book with which every earnest student of cross-examination should be familiar. Now, this little section comes from the book called The Art of Cross-Examination by Francis Wellman. It was first published back in 1902. Now, those of us that deal with the testimony of real live people on the witness stand can tell you plainly that every witness that gets on the witness stand lies. Every witness. That's every witness for both sides. When he gets on the witness stand, he lies. Well, at least some of the time. And after all, that's what I pointed out to you last time. And that is, everybody tells the truth. Hell, even I tell the truth once in a while. Accidentally, I will tell the truth. And so does everybody else. My point last time was that everybody lies, at least some of the time. And that deception comes from a combination of both lies and truth. And I pointed out to you that if I always told you the truth, you'd always know the truth. And if I always lied to you, you would always know the truth. And in order for me to deceive you, I have to mix lies with the truth in order to deceive. And that's because truth plus truth equals truth. And error plus error equals error. But error plus truth equals error. When you mix error with the truth, you come up with error. Now, here's Senator George F. Hoar comes along and he says, listen, I personally, as a senator, and in my long life of more than 70 years, I observe people who were in the Senate, who were in the actual transaction, when they're giving statements to historians and biographers, give contradictory statements. You know, if three people are in a transaction, all three people should report that transaction the same. They don't. They don't. And you've probably experienced that, but maybe you haven't thought too much about it. Now, last time I said I'm a pathological liar. And let me ask you, now, when I say to you I'm a pathological liar, is that the truth? Or am I lying to you? Mull that one over for a minute. Because nobody ever walks up and says, listen, you can't believe what I'm telling you because I'm a liar. You should go over and listen to Bob over there. He tells the truth. You know, Bob is truthful. But don't listen to me because I'm a liar. I've never heard anybody say that. You go into church, and you can go into 15 different churches on 15 different Sundays, and you'll hear 15 different stories from 15 different guys, and they all contradict one another. And they'll tell you plainly, if you don't believe me, you're going to hell. Well, it's been my experience. That's what they told me. They said, hey, if you don't believe me, you're going right straight to hell, son. And then sure enough, I didn't believe them, and then, if they're telling the truth, I'm going to hell. But I thought they were liars, which is why I didn't believe them and I didn't go back. So I'm not fully persuaded that I'm going to hell. But then, you know, I may be surprised. Now, Edgar James Swift, he's a professor of psychology, clear back in 1918, wrote a book on this very subject that we all deal with, those of us that are in the legal profession, those of us that teach law, or those of us that practice it in the courtrooms, we all know. Every professional, every judge will tell you, the witnesses are all liars. And what we're sifting through are the lies that these witnesses are telling so that we can arrive at the truth. The fact finder, he's actually trying to find the truth of the matter. Did the red car hit the green car, or did the green car hit the red car? We're listening to three witnesses that are telling us contradictory stories. All right, so Professor Swift relates some very interesting experiments in human observation that he's carried out with his psychology classes, from which he draws this conclusion. He said, my experiments have proved to me that, in general, when the average man reports events or conversations from memory and then conscientiously believes that he's telling the truth, about one-fourth of his statements are incorrect, and this tendency to false memory is the greater the longer the time since the original experience. He gets into that in a little more detail as we progress along, but I'm going to put a bracket around that statement and refer to it again. Now let's take U.S. News and World Report, a very prestigious weekly news magazine. And they report on the Iraq War every week. There's an article in there about the Iraq War. And over the past 3 years, they have written 150 articles on the Iraq War. Now, you go back and you read those same 150 articles and what they were saying 3 years ago and compare them to what they're saying today, and they contradict one another. They will be contradictory. Now, do we conclude then that U.S. News and World Report is a lying rag sheet that we ought not to listen to? And I'm not telling you that. I'm telling you that there are contradictory statements in those articles. And that magazine may contradict or disagree with conclusions or articles that are written in Time or Newsweek or in the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Los Angeles Times or the Chicago Tribune. And they've all got reporters over in Iraq, and they're making reports. And we're going to presume, for the sake of our discussion, that every one of those reporters is reporting to you the truth to the best of his ability. And here's the bottom line. Scientifically, demonstrably, 25% of everything that's coming out of those reporters' mouths is false. Not everything, just 25%. And that's from people who are on the spot, eyewitness observers to the facts. And their reports are 25% in error. How do you like that, children? So now all of a sudden, this statement by the Apostle Paul in Romans 3, verse 4, that says, "Let God be true, though every man be found a liar," is in fact a true statement, scientifically. And Professor Swift demonstrates that. Now, Professor Swift reports that upon one occasion, when the regular work of one of his classes was in progress, the following scene, which had been carefully rehearsed, was suddenly enacted before the eyes of the students who were seated in a semicircle. An altercation was heard in the corridor when the door burst open and four students, two young men and two young women, dashed into the room. Miss R., immediately after entering the room, dropped a brown paper package on the floor. This package contained a brick so that the occurrence might not be too inconspicuous. K. flourished a large yellow banana as though it were a pistol. All four struggled across the room to the side opposite the door where Professor Swift himself was seated among several members of the class. Professor Swift stood up at once, protesting at the interruption. And as he arose, he threw a small torpedo on the floor. H. fell back crying, "I am shot!" and was caught by Miss R. All then hurried out through the open door. Miss T., picking up the brown paper package which had been dropped near the door by Miss R. Now, this entire scene occupied less than 30 seconds, and it was startling to the class. All of the class members jumped up and crowded back against the wall, believing that it was, in fact, a real riot. There were 29 students in the class, and the 29 students of the class were then told that this scene had been made to order. And they were then asked to write out in detail their memory and their observation of what they had observed. All right, now you got the picture here? Four people come into the class and they perform a little act that had been made to order. Professor Swift was a part and parcel with this demonstration. Now, when this demonstration is going on, the 29 members of the class all believe that a real riot is going on. They jump up, they crowd back against the door. There's yelling and raised voices, and somebody fires a shot. Everybody heard bang! And then they could smell gunpowder, because Professor Swift had thrown a small torpedo on the floor. Now, for those of you that aren't familiar with a small torpedo, those old-timers in here know what those are. It's a charge that goes into what looks like a little bomb, and it's got a detonator in the front of it. And when you throw it up in the air, it always falls with the nose down, and when it falls to the cement sidewalk, is where I always used to blow off my torpedoes. It has a charge in it, and it goes bang. It sounds like a firecracker. It sounds like a gunshot. And then from that, smoke will come up, and you will smell this smoke. Now, there's actually gun smoke in here, and there's a guy that falls backward and says, I've been shot. Two people pick him up off the floor and carry him out. All right, now there's the scene. Now, three of the actors were actual members of the class, and Miss R., although not a member of the class, was a senior who was very prominent in all college activities, and all of the class knew her by sight and by name. Of the 29 witnesses to this transaction, only three remembered that there were four persons who had entered the room. All right, now you got 29 witnesses here. But of the 29 witnesses, only three people out of 29 remembered that there were four people that came in the room. The other 26 witnesses put down a different number, 2, 3, 4, 5, 9, 11, different number of people. Remember, there were four people came into the room. Three witnesses correctly identified four came into the room. 26 witnesses reported some other number. and although no disguises were used, there wasn't a single person who recognized all four of the actors. Now get this. You got 29 witnesses. The 29 witnesses know by name and by sight every one of the four actors who came into the room. Three of these actors are actual members of the class. One, who's not a member of the class, but is a young woman who is prominent in college activities, probably the class president or something of that order. Not a single witness out of 29. Get this? And although no disguises were used, not a single person recognized all four of the actors. They could recognize one or two or three, but they could not recognize all four. Many of the witnesses described the occurrence as that of a mob or of a crowd. All right, now would you call four people a mob or a crowd? Because many of the witnesses, now that's many out of 29, described it as a mob or a crowd. Seven students recognized three of the actors. Seven out of 29 could recognize three, but not four. 11 recognized two, seven recognized one, and four recognized no one. So out of 29 witnesses, four witnesses could recognize not a single actor, of which they all knew personally, by name and by sight. Seven could only recognize one of the four, 11 could only recognize two, and seven students could recognize three. Yet all of the actors were persons that they met every day. And as surprising as these figures may seem to those who think that even under excitement they could recognize an acquaintance whom they had seen at least three times a week for 8 months, the results were nevertheless too favorable to observation and memory, for recognition by elimination of those present played an important role. Now, eight witnesses saw persons who not only took no part in the performance, but were not present. Now, that's very important. I'm going to underline that statement. Out of 29 witnesses, eight witnesses reported. They said, "I saw Bob there." But Bob wasn't even present. Of these eight, one saw a former member of the class who had withdrawn about 3 months earlier, and a young woman who had never been in the class and was not even present was seen by two. The descriptions of the clothing were so general as to be worthless for purposes of identification, and if details were given, they were generally found to be inaccurate. Only one witness spoke of the brown paper parcel. No one saw Miss T pick it up. Several students saw the flash of a pistol. And one young woman wrote that they were attempting to hold back a man with long black hair. This evidently referred to H, since the other young man, R, had light hair and followed H into the room. H's hair, however, was short, and the description was the description of a young Italian who had been a member of the class earlier in the year, but who had withdrawn from the class several months before this experiment took place. Later, this student, in her deposition, actually named that Italian as among the four participants. Five witnesses' reports did not contain a single item of truth or fact. I'm going to underline that. Out of 29 witnesses, five witnesses made written depositions that did not contain a single item of fact or truth. Three witnesses saw nothing except a confusion and a mob bursting into the room. Six others were unable to testify to more than the identity of one of the participants, and to these all else was a blank. Now, Professor Swift draws this conclusion from his experiment. Identification is always fundamental in criminal cases, and positive recognition by well-intended, disinterested, or uninterested persons is commonly accepted unless the alibi is convincing. In our drama experiment, the observers were all well acquainted with all of the participants, and yet they were surprisingly incompetent as witnesses. Their minds were prepared, had the event involved a real crime, they said, to recognize one against whom there might appear to be corroborative evidence. The witnesses proved, however, to have had little definite knowledge of what actually happened, and had a crime actually been committed, their testimony should have had slight value, if any, and yet it would have been accepted because they were eyewitnesses. Now, only a few identified actors, and in several instances, these identifications were so uncertain as to be readily transferred to someone else under the influence of suggestion. In estimating the accuracy of memory, Professor Swift gives some very illuminating additional experiments that he made with his classes, showing through how many mouths that a story must pass before it loses all of its identity altogether. A newspaper clipping was read to one member of the class, who in turn repeated that story immediately to the next member of the class, and then so on to the end. Then, as soon as each student had heard the story and had repeated that story, he immediately wrote down the story that he heard. Now, the original story read like this. It said, quote, "Thomas McCarthy, who also used the name Burns and Hopkins, was arraigned yesterday on the charge of having conspired to forge and pass stolen money orders. His case was adjourned for a week. He was arrested on Monday night in a saloon. The district attorney said yesterday that the score of money orders which the man was accused of passing at department stores were some of those stolen by Yeagerman a month ago from the post office in St. Louis. The money orders had been filled in for varying amounts, a number of which were more than $100. McCarthy was held in $10,000 bail." Unquote. Now that's the story, one paragraph. The first paper, as quoted, shows how the story started down the line. It said, "Thomas McCarthy, who formerly gave the names of Burr and Buss, was arrested for forgery. The trial will come in a week. He was arrested last Monday night in a corner saloon. He tried to pass checks formerly used by Layton in the department stores, and since none of the amounts were over $100, he was left out on $1,000 bail before the district attorney." Unquote. Now, beginning with the second attempt at reproduction of the story, there were conditions and increasing omissions and additions with frequent changes in the aliases. The seventh report was so very reduced as to be worth quoting. And here's what the seventh report of this story says. Quote, there was a man named McCarthy who went by the name of Bernie, who forged a check for $100 and was arrested." Unquote. Number 11 lost the surname and changed the alias to Sussex. The story now becomes, "There was a man named Thomas. He went by the name of Sussex. He forged a check for $100 and escaped." Here the story may be said to have lost all resemblance to that with which number 1 began. These students were interested in the experiment. There was rivalry to see who could remember the most accurately. They concentrated their attention to the limit of their ability, and yet the results were chiefly remarkable for their omissions and their additions. And from these experiments, Professor Swift answers the following query. He said, quote, "First, what are the chances for a truthful narration of that which has been seen or heard? Clearly the chances of even a reasonably accurate narration are small. We have found observation itself exceedingly defective and unreliable. And when to the inaccuracy of observation are then added the disturbing effect of reviewing them, with the deflected influence of conversation about the events and the excitement of the imagination, the testimony of witnesses
becomes extremely undependable. Imagination reconstructs evidence with many omissions and substitutions, and the final outcome is likely to be so different from the original as to be almost unrecognizable. Expectation of an act may cause it to be seen, and then an intention to do something translates that thought into deed. Suggestion is always operative. Suggestion of actions, when one is an observer, and suggestion from questions, even of fact in conversation, or when on the witness stand. And we call it in law the power of suggestion. So we got to take a little break here. We'll come back and we'll talk about these events that Professor Swift staged for the benefit of his students and indeed for our benefit today. When we answer the question, can you believe the salesman? When we come back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through our website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. If you'd like to order one, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we offer do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Now, remember that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint is not totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. At least, not always. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertiser sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at area code 417-273-4967. We are talking about advertising, and I said advertising is a controlled, deliberate lie. I say that from personal experience. You see, I've been in the business world now since 1950. And as a businessman, I've had occasion to put out some ads. And I've also had occasion to deal with and to work with advertising people. And these advertising people were trying to sell my products. And we would sit there and we would talk about our products, and I would give them facts and figures, and then they would write up advertising copy to be played either on television or radio or published in some medium. And then we would carefully contrive the ad to deceive you. That's right. I deliberately worked with the advertising people to deceive you into buying my product over my competitor's product. Now, in politics, we call this negative advertising. So when you see one of these negative ads, it is one politician lying about another politician. But he's using true facts. He's telling you the truth about this guy's voting record over here, that this politician three times voted this way, which leads you to believe that this politician is opposed to all elderly people, all children and women, which makes all of the elderly and the women who are voters vote against that politician because he voted three times against this particular legislation. So they mix the truth with a lie to lead you to a false conclusion. Both sides are doing this. So you can rest assured that all of the information that you receive in a political campaign from both sides are pure, total lies in the ultimate conclusion. But these lies contain truth mixed with error, which are deliberately calculated to confuse and to deceive. And after all, that's the purpose of advertising. And so the advertisers and the politicians have succeeded in their objective. It's their purpose to deceive and to confuse the electorate. Now, we do the same thing when we want to sell water beds or automobiles or we're selling furniture. It doesn't make any difference what we're selling. It could be an idea. Maybe it's a concept, a philosophy. We're selling Roman Catholicism versus Lutheranism or Baptistism or Mohammedism or whatever it is. It could be political, it can be social, it can be economic, it can be anything. We can be selling Social Security, the third rail of politics. Now, you have a belief concerning Social Security. Based upon what? The Social Security Act is written in Title 42 of the United States Code, Section 301 through 335. I would venture a guess. Let me make this statement. Not a single one of you people listening to me right now has ever read the Social Security Act. And until I just told you that it's in Title 42, Section 301 through 335, you didn't even know where it was located, and you wouldn't have been able to find it. Now let me tell you where to find it. It's in any law library contained in the United States Code. In Section 42, which is going to be, you know, Title 42, Section 301 through 335. Now I told you. But you've never read it. But you do have an opinion concerning Social Security. But I would ask the question, why do you have any opinions concerning Social Security since you've never read the Act and don't know anything about it? And you say, oh, I know all about Social Security. Well, what do you know about Social Security? Well, I know what my senator said about it. I know what I read about Social Security in the newspaper. I know about Social Security because my grandfather told me about it. Excuse me, partner, but did your granddaddy read Title 42, Section 301 through 335? I doubt it. I'll go so far as to say I wouldn't believe it if you told me that he had read it. I would not believe you. Boys and girls, there's 535 members of the Congress of the United States, and I would go so far as to say that not a single one of those senators or representatives has ever read the Social Security Act contained in Title 42, Section 301 through 335. Now, I could be wrong, and maybe Ron Paul did read it. You know, maybe there is 1, 2, or 3, or 9, or 11 that did actually read the whole act. But I can tell you from personal experience that even if they read it and then reported on it, you'd get the same report that Professor Swift reported. It would be inaccurate. And at least 25% of what their report would contain would be just as false as Professor Swift's experiment containing this paragraph about Thomas McCarthy. And that's because it's called hearsay. And hearsay is totally unreliable. Totally. 100% unreliable. But the hearsay will contain some elements of truth. But all hearsay will contain 25% inaccuracies, and that's if we want to tell the truth. And you know, a lot of people don't want to tell the truth. They want to lie to you, like me. See, when I was writing the advertising copy, I wanted to lie to you. Hell, I wasn't telling the truth. What are you talking about, you fool? Me tell you the truth about my own product? Boys and girls, learn a lesson. If you're ever in court and you're on the hot seat, you are the defendant in a criminal case. The worst thing that can happen to you is that your opponent comes in and tells the truth about you. That's the worst thing that can happen. The best thing that can happen is that they all come in and lie about you. Because if they come in and lie about you, you have a chance. You have a chance to expose their lies and discredit them in the minds of the fact finder. But boys and girls, if they ever come in and tell the truth about you, you are dead on arrival. Because if they're telling the truth, you'll never be able to shake them on cross-examination. Now, you know, I'm fair to middling good. I'm not an F. Lee Bailey, you know, and I'm not a Francis Wellman, but I've been in the courtroom a time or two, and I can cross-examine fair to middling well. And if I catch a guy lying on the witness stand, I'll eat his lunch. The worst thing happens to me is when the guy tells the truth. And that'll sink my ship. So I'm really in favor of people lying when they get on the witness stand, especially when I'm examining them or cross-examining. I'd prefer that my witnesses tell the truth and the other guys lie so that I can expose them. But then oftentimes my witnesses lie. Now, what do you do when your own witnesses lie? And hell, they may even be actually believing their own lies. That's why I pointed out to you, I said, you know, this whole thing of advertising over here is one great big controlled lie. Now, not just one guy comes over here and says, well, let me explain to you how this thing works, and then unless a whistleblower comes over and says, well, let me tell you what's going on here, you're not very likely to find out about that. So I'm the whistleblower, and I'm the guy that put out the ad copy, and if I'm doing it, I can guarantee you that the other furniture companies are doing the same thing. Everybody is lying to you about these things like, hurry, 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 don't miss out, buy now. No payments until January. 3.2% interest, everything goes floor to ceiling, wall to wall, below cost, overstocked, save, 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 sale, 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 on sale. Horse pucking. Advertising is a controlled lie. And every one of those statements, hurry, 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 don't miss out, buy now, no payments until January, hey, we're telling you the truth. When I say, when you sign that contract, there'll be no payments until January, I'm not lying to you. That statement is true, but the overall ad is a lie, the overall ad is a deception, the overall proposition that I'm making to you is a deception, and I'm intending to deceive you, and my purpose is to get your money away from you. My purpose is to get you to buy my product instead of somebody else's, or to buy my idea instead of somebody else's, or vote for me instead of voting for that other guy. If we all told the truth, I'm fully convinced that the world would not come to an end and that we could probably still have Chevrolets and Fords. We could probably still have a Republican and a Democrat running for office. But we would all just tell the truth. We would all just tell people, here's what I know. And when we ask the question, have you ever read Title 42, Section 301 through 335? I would say, no, I never have. What is it? It's the Social Security Act. Gee, I should read that sometime, especially as your United States Senator. Since I'm going to be voting on Social Security legislation from time to time, I probably should be familiar with the Social Security Act. But I'm not. But I promise you that if I'm elected, I will read the Social Security Act. I got a report to you that on the Patriot Act, when it was voted on, the Patriot Act contained 1,304 pages. 1,304 pages. Kids, wake up. How many of your legislators do you honest to God believe read those 1,304 pages before they voted on them? Because the Patriot Act was delivered to the Senate and the House of Representatives just 24 hours before it was voted on. So there's, I'm just going to do this for you. It's 1,304, and we're going to divide that by 24 hours. That's 54 pages an hour. If every one of those representatives who received the Patriot Act in its full text 24 hours before they voted on it, they had to read 54 pages an hour, divided by 60, is 9/10 of a page per minute. They had to read roughly one page a minute for 24 solid hours before they walked in and voted. Assuming that the guy slept 8 hours before he went in and voted so that his mind would be clear and he would have full mental capacity and faculties before he cast his vote, then he only had 16 hours to read it. So we take 1,304 divided by 16, and he had to read 81 pages an hour. Divided by 60 minutes means he had to read 1 1/3 pages a minute for 16 solid hours, and then go in and cast his vote after 8 hours of sleep so that his mental faculties were functioning at 100% and he was making an intelligent and articulable vote on the passage of the Patriot Act. How many of your representatives and senators do you honest to God believe read that act? Now, Senator Ron Paul, Representative Ron Paul, every once in a while he puts out on his webpage some of these little stories about how these votes come down and how the representatives and senators get the information and how much time they have and so on. And it should be shocking. I wouldn't vote for any of these clowns. There isn't one of them in there that has the native intelligence to carry guts to a barrel, save maybe Ron Paul and four or five others. But these people don't even read the legislation that they're voting on. They rely upon their staffs who said that they read it, and here's their report, and they come in and they report, and whatever their report is 25% inaccurate. So every representative and senator that goes in to vote has 25% inaccuracies, bare minimum 25% inaccuracies in the reports that he has seen or heard or read when he goes in to vote. Now, honest to God, do you want that kind of law being enacted that's 25% inaccurate coming out of the chute? Well, that's what you got. Now, I'm not telling you that that's bad. I guess that's what people want because that's what they keep voting for over and over again. But my point is this. It's a controlled lie. It isn't true. It isn't accurate. And it isn't correct. And that goes for advertising when we're buying products, such as Wonder Bread builds strong bodies 12 ways. You've heard that ad and that jingle. Wonder Bread builds strong bodies 12 ways. All right? Well, I read a particular report on Wonder Bread put out by Interstate Bakeries. They put a colony of rats on Wonder Bread for 3 months. And they put a colony of rats on whole wheat bread for the same 90-day period. Within 6 weeks of eating Wonder Bread, they didn't even last 90 days, 6 weeks of eating Wonder Bread, the rats eating this Wonder Bread that builds strong bodies 12 ways all died. And then the colony of rats that were eating the whole wheat bread thrived, and they lived for 90 days and everything was fine. Now, there's a conflict out here in the marketplace over whole wheat bread versus Wonder White Bread. Now, boys and girls, I'm not telling you that Wonder White Bread doesn't taste good, that the butter doesn't spread on the bread and it doesn't tear when you spread the butter, or that it's got a wonderful crust and it's got a marvelous shape. All that's probably true. But to listen to the ad, you would think that Wonder Bread builds strong bodies, or 12 ways, is that it's full of vitamins and minerals. And it is. It says right on the label, vitamin D enriched. And so somebody took some vitamin D and poured it into the batch. But excuse me, children, there are 91 vitamins and minerals and amino acids. 91. Well, so says Joel Wallach. Say, I'm a plumber. What the hell do I know how many vitamins and minerals there are? But the report that I received from Joel Wallach told me there was 91, so I'm reporting that to you. Wonder Bread does not contain all 91 vitamins, minerals, and amino acids. It contains some. Now, whole wheat bread does not contain all 91 vitamins, minerals, and amino acids. At least the last report that I saw says that it's got a lot of vitamins, minerals, and amino acids, but not all 91. But the whole wheat bread contains more of the 91, something like 50 or so. 50 vitamins, minerals, and amino acids. And the Wonder Bread contains about 6. Okay. Now, the people at Wonder Bakers certainly ought not to be selling the concept or the idea that Wonder Bread builds strong bodies 12 ways and that it's healthful and nutritious and better for you than whole wheat bread. But that's the message that you receive. When you get through reading the advertising from Wonder Bakers, it's this stuff is really healthful and nutritious and we ought to eat more of it because we're getting more vitamins and minerals because it builds strong bodies 12 ways. That's a lie. It's not true. It's not true at all. Now, it is not true either that the whole wheat bread over here is the magic panacea, and that if you eat just whole wheat bread, you're going to live to be 110 and no cancer either, because there are people that do eat whole wheat bread and they get cancer and they do not live to be 110. But we find that when we feed it to rats, that the rats live longer than they do on Wonder Bread. Now, that leads me to a conclusion. Wonder Bread looks good, smells good, tastes good. And I love it. But that doesn't mean that it's necessarily good for me or that I ought to buy it. And the Wonder Bakers ought to tell the truth about their product. They ought to say, it smells great. If you like good smelling bread, we got the better product. And it tastes better than that whole wheat. I would agree with you. I think it smells better. I think it tastes better. And it chews easier. And you can wad it up into little gumballs and throw it across the cafeteria and stick it on the wall or on the ceiling. And it sticks better than whole wheat bread. And it throws better. And it makes tighter, harder balls of paste when you go to hit old Sammy Johnson on the other side of the cafeteria. I agree with all of that. And that's the way Wonder Bread ought to be sold. By telling the truth. I know it's a wild new concept, but, you know. Old Al Capp, you know, used to have a cartoon strip called Little Abner, and there was a bunch of characters that he'd created back in the early 1950s called the Schmooze, S-C-H-M-O-O-S. And these little Schmooze, when you saw one, you had to tell the truth. And so, you know, here's Little Abner, and he's talking to somebody, and here comes the politician then, says, vote for me, and there's this Smoo here, and the politician, he has to tell the truth, so he says, well, I'm a liar, a thief, a cheat, and you know, and I'm taking bribes, and I don't vote the way you want me to, but vote for me anyway, because I need the work. I'd be unemployed if I had to go out and get a real job. I'd probably starve to death. And then it was pretty funny, because these schmoos, you know, anytime you looked into their eyes, you couldn't lie. You always had to tell the truth. So there's the story on Wonder Bread. Now, I'm not opposed to Wonder Bread. I mean, hell, you know, those people have to make a living just like you and I do. But do they have to tell us that Wonder Bread builds strong bodies 12 ways? Do they have to tell us that? Because it isn't so. And a lot of people who are not nutritionists don't know. You know, just people like you and me. I mean, what the hell do I know about nutrition? I've told you before, I'm a plumber. So what I know about nutrition is what I read, you know, in the papers. It's what I read in Reader's Digest or U.S. News and World Report, or what I read in books and periodicals. And I have opinions concerning white bread and brown bread just like you do. And my opinions are based upon what I read, based upon the advertisements, based upon what somebody said, or what somebody heard somebody say, or what somebody heard somebody who heard somebody who heard somebody else say, and so on down the line, until pretty soon, what somebody heard somebody heard somebody heard somebody say isn't true any longer. And then I believe that, and then I act upon that information, and it comes back to harm me, because I get cancer by eating Wonder Bread, and I wonder why. And then I go to my doctor, who then proceeds to lie to me some more and take $100,000 from me to cure my cancer, which he can't cure. I like the medical profession, though. Now, they tell you the truth. They say, we don't know what causes cancer. And we don't have a cure for cancer. But for $100,000, we do have a treatment. I like that. They're telling you the truth. We don't know what causes it. We don't know how to cure it. And for $100,000, we'll treat you. And if you live for 5 years during this treatment period, we'll call you cured. And that's true. But every night on the news, they're telling you constantly that we're making breakthroughs in cancer research, and we're doing all these great and wonderful things with cancer. And it leads us to believe that the medical profession is the answer to cancer. It is the only answer to cancer. And if there's any other answer to cancer, it isn't worth listening to. And alternative therapies for cancer are bogus, and they're quackery, and you ought not to listen to them. And so that's a lie. That's not true. It's a belief. It's a conclusion that we arrive at. But it's false. And so the medical profession, they tell us the truth, then they mix that with lies, and then it leads us to a false conclusion, which then kills us. Wonder Bread does not build strong bodies 12 ways. All right, we're about out of time. I'm going to have to wrap it up right here. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Let me give you a reminder that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here on this local radio station, 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, just go to our website, georgegordon.org. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.